At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, the latest TikTok trend, or one of them, is a thing called loud budgeting, where people are open and extremely vocal about how much money they have and how much they're prepared to spend. It's American, of course. Will it catch on here? Difficult to imagine. Frank Conway is the founder of MoneyWiz. Good afternoon, Frank.
Good afternoon.
Well, Irish people would be shy about speaking about financial things, I would assume.
Oh, very much so. And it's a very much an American thing. And just to let you know, I lived there for a long time, almost 2 decades. And Americans are very different in terms of how they share information. They can share a lot of private information very quickly with you. So I think this is a carry on from that in terms of sharing that they're broke. And essentially, that's what that is. It's really younger people coming out and saying, look, I'm not going to go to that event because I really don't have enough money, and they're going to share that information. Irish people just aren't that way inclined. We're just very different. We tend to hold our cards close to our chest, and we tend to whisper rather than shouting, especially when it comes to money. So there might be a little bit of panic, certainly in both camps, when they get that wedding invite or birthday invite, you know. And that shows up in stats, by the way, of a survey I keep running. But Irish people aren't going to shout from the top of their heads that they don't have the money. They'll probably squeeze as much as possible maybe to make the event.
Yeah, so I mean, so especially if you're at that age, you're being invited to a lot of weddings, and weddings are very expensive for the people going, I mean, the people having the wedding. We tend to kind of avoid those questions then.
Oh, totally, yeah. And very much, you know, in Ireland as well, there doesn't tend to be a discussion around things like that. You know, very often money itself is perhaps something that people are very uncomfortable talking about, because it's both maybe a cultural thing, it's also a confidence thing, because one thing we found out in Ireland is that, and this is a couple of international services, the levels of financial literacy in Ireland would be lower, so people won't bring up a whole range of topics, you know. And just this morning, I gave a seminar, people are on talking about pensions, and people are almost afraid to ask the question until they become more comfortable who you are, for example. So people are afraid, really, to discuss money for a number of reasons. So it's both cultural and it's confidence. And I think in terms of the cultural side versus the American side, that isn't going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, so from the cultural point of view, do you think the Irish are, they don't want to admit if they've more money than other people, or they don't want to admit that they've less money than other people, or is it both?
Oh, I think it's both. I mean, that's kind of where the word bail bucks comes in. We kind of like that side of it. You know, we kind of not wanting to talk about money. And I think partly it's cultural, because there's been a long history in Ireland where there really wasn't a lot of money. And, you know, it was very difficult. And we had a lot of outward migration for people to go off and get jobs. And that is still continuing to some degree. So I think it's both a cultural thing. Having wealth, the idea of it has really only come into play perhaps in the last 25, 30 years, where we began to see the economy picking back up. So it's a long historical thing in terms of actually, you know, wealth being created here. We didn't have industry, for example, and so a lot of it was very much agricultural, very difficult to build wealth off that. So culturally, we've never had that side of it, maybe to talk about it. And secondly, who we are as a people, you know, we're very different. Again, we tend to, you know, be more silent than we are, more shouting. And again, that American side is that they'll be very upfront about it. But it's also perhaps a passing trend. You know, I know a lot of Americans that perhaps wouldn't go down that route. They might share it with you, but they wouldn't certainly shout it. But, you know, we live in different times. People share information differently. The trick at the end of the day is, can somebody guide you? And that's where knowledge is really important in terms of making good decisions, or making decisions that might be, you know, financially prudent.
Yeah. And why aren't we financially literate? And well, actually, first off, Frank, what do you mean by financially literate?
Financially literate. So there's a really interesting study. It's done by Standard & Poor's. And the first one was done back in 2014. And then there was a couple of subsequent ones done. So financially literate would be understanding basic concepts of money, for example. You know, how does compound interest work? You know, it works tremendously well in pensions right now. Government is pushing the whole auto-enrollment process. But often what they're not explaining is actually the magic of money compounding. So compound interest works positively, so people don't always understand it. It works negatively if you use a credit card debt, for example, you only make the minimum payment. It's very important when it comes to, say, investing, for example, because very often people will confuse things around leaving their money on a credit union. They give out about it because the credit union doesn't pay a lot in deposits. With the grow money, you have to invest it, and that's not what the credit unions are. Banks are there. And then when it comes to investing, people often confuse investing with speculation. So it's really understanding those concepts, and it's really, you know, it's a very basic approach to money. How do you take a certain amount of risk, for example? When people sign up for company pension plans, they're afraid to ask questions. They won't max out on their contribution limits. And so it's very much a confidence thing. It's understanding basic terminology. And often the industry, the personal finance industry, is really terrible at that. There are sometimes 10 descriptions for the same thing, i.e. pensions. You know. So literacy is at least understanding the very basic concepts of how money works. You know, taxation in Ireland, probably close to 200 million gets left on the table because sometimes people perhaps are uncomfortable with terminology or processes, you know. So that's a big part of it.
Yeah. Is it made perhaps sometimes deliberately opaque?
Oh, I think so, without a doubt. I mean, I would say, you know, I give a lot of seminars, for example. So when I set them up, for example, you've got to become complex and become simple again. You know, you've got to simplify the idea to somebody, say, here's how something works. You know, you've got to display that. And what I find as well sometimes in the industry is that people who even pass QFA exams, Qualified Financial Advisor exams, they themselves will get certain facts and figures wrong about pension contributions, about compounding money, for example. So even within the industry, there is a complexity of language that I think sometimes people haven't thought through to say, how do we simplify this for people and make it really, really easy? So I think there's an issue within the industry to simplify money and make it more accessible to people, at least the concept of how it works. That's really important. I do this at schools. I give away a free program into schools, teaching them how to read payslips. But once you go through it, they learn really, really quickly. So it's really kind of simplified as much as possible. Don't make it intimidating and drop the terminology that will be confusing for some people, for a lot of people probably.
Yeah. The thing about, actually, let me read a couple of texts here from listeners. I was at a dinner recently, and my friend just dropped their salary into conversation, not in a boasting way, very casually. Mm-hmm. However, there was then an awkwardness at the table because no one was willing to join in that conversation about how much they earned. Yep. Somebody else says, when I met my now wife, I got so embarrassed when discussing our salary when it came to buying a house. I had never told anyone before, and I knew I made less than her.
Yeah, and that is universal. You know, that's not just an Irish thing. That is universal, and very often, you know, that is an uncomfortable conversation. It's a very personal thing. And even when I ask people, you know, how much they make, I preface it by saying, look, I'm going to ask you a personal question. This is why I'm asking, because I need to work out some back-end numbers. And they're very comfortable with that. They'll share it confidentially. But, you know, you have to approach it a certain way. But generally, as a point of discussion, you know, we tend not to ask the question, or we will view it as being rude. And there's lots of really interesting studies over the years in terms of that particular point of discussion, you know, why it's not discussed, why it's not raised, and it's simply because it's so personal. And it's also, we as a society view it as a mark of success, for example, or of achievement. And so some people will say, gee, if that's the only measure of achievement, maybe I haven't done so well. Well, there's other ways of achieving other things. So it's not just about money.
Yeah.
And the other thing, when it comes to money, sometimes people can work magic with very little income. I've seen people earning 40,000 doing wonderful things, and more people who earn three times that will struggle. So it's again that relationship with money is very important as well.
Yeah. Someone else says, I feel more and more people in the 30s will easily say, I can't come because I'm broke, etc. Well, in my friend group anyway. Are you finding that, Frank?
I find that people are more sharing in terms of more open about it. There's less a sense of it being private. You know, I do give a lot of talks, and I deal with people from all age groups in the 20s, 30s, 40s. It depends on the person, I think, to some degree. I think perhaps some of the social media sites do open up and say it's okay to talk about it. But I think there will be others, you know, that would be very hesitant. So it really depends on, you know, who's perhaps more influenced than another. But I would still find that there would be some groups, even in their 20s and 30s, would be perhaps hesitant about talking about it. So it's not across the board. It's really down to the personality of the individual. What I will say is that I do this running survey, and about 18% of people in their 30s tell me that they're terrified of getting a wedding invite or a birthday invite. You know, it's a really interesting one. And that's gone up very slightly because of inflation. So across the board, people are saying they're finding it difficult going. They'll share the information anonymously. So there is a challenge out there. Whether they'll talk about it loudly or not is really kind of, I think that's open for discussion and debate maybe. But I don't really see it as a predominantly Irish thing. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah. Another texter says, and they really are showing their age, they should teach primary schools now how to cut credit cards in half with scissors, with the help of an adult, of course. Of course, there's a certain generation not using credit cards anymore anyway. Is the technology a help or a hindrance? Or is it an aid, should I say?
Yeah, that's a good debate. I mean, sometimes people ask the question, you know, is contactless better or not? I don't think it really makes a difference. I find people who are instinctively good with money, that they can almost set a budget in their head. Credit card debt, you know, credit card debt can be fine if you pay it off right away. It's a very convenient use of money. And one of the things I use credit cards for is it insulates me against the fraudsters, for example. I won't use a debit card. I've never used a debit card probably in the last 20 years. And that is, it gives me insulation. But I pay off the debt right away. I don't accumulate. I don't make minimum payments and things like that. So, and you don't need, you know, the physical credit card anymore. You know, it's on your phone or it's wherever. So broadly, it's really how do you understand the application of credit and debt and interest, to when you use it, for example. That's a really important one. A lot of younger people will know that, you know, where they do, there's a challenge when they start working, for example, is they'll make life decisions. They want to enjoy life in their 20s and 30s. They want to go off and travel. They want to live out. They want to, eat out and so forth. And putting money into a pension for them isn't important. One of the points I make to them all the time is, hey, you don't have to do it, but at least understand it. And they appreciate that side of it. And sometimes when they understand it better, they'll say, gee, you know, this is a good way of actually using my money going forward because it will compound and accumulate over time. They are inquisitive. What I do find is that younger audiences are much more open about being inquisitive about how money works. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Frank, thanks so much for speaking with us today. That was Frank Conway, the founder of MoneyWiz. A texter says, I find it really arrogant when people bring money into conversations. There are some people that will find any reason to bring it up. I'm not that kind of person, so I always think it makes me look cheap because I don't want to talk about money. Another texter says, similar thing, if you're around South Dublin, people will talk about money no problem. How much their car, their house, holiday costs. Couldn't get over when I moved up here. All lovely people, but they love chatting money. Ooh, does anyone listen to us in South Dublin to kind of either verify that's true or to say, no, that's not true? Please get in touch. Speaking of buying a house, when I went to buy a house with my husband, I told him how much savings I had in my bank account. I had the standard amount for a house. My husband replied by telling me he had 135 grand in savings. It was the weirdest conversation of our relationship. I didn't want to ask how he accumulated such money. I hope you did ask him eventually, just in case there's any lingering suspicions there. Some people pee their wages away on drink and can't afford how they can't afford basic things. Well, that's true. But one would imagine that's a minority of people. And again, going back to one of the issues that Frank was talking about there, Sarah says, we have a wedding coming up in Italy, which will cost an arm and a leg to attend. We're saving for a house and it's going to be a huge strain, but still don't feel like we can turn it down. Loud budgeting would be great if more socially acceptable, though. Indeed, there you go. And you can't say to them, we're broke, would they understand? No. This is an issue that's come up again and again.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.